Welcome to From Trauma to True Love, the podcast where we break the cycle of painful relationships and build deep, lasting love you can trust. I'm Layla Reyes, a relationship coach, speaker, and author of Freedom from Shame, Trauma, Forgiveness, and Healing from Sexual Abuse. I'm here to help you release the invisible wounds from your past that may be holding you back from the love you truly desire. In each episode, we'll uncover the hidden patterns shaped by early childhood trauma, explore how they impact your relationships today, and guide you toward creating the partnership you were born to have. Whether you're looking to attract the one, deepen an existing connection, or finally feel safe in love, this is a space to discover what's possible. Let's dive into your journey from trauma to love. I'm your host, Layla Reyes, and I'm deeply committed to supporting survivors of childhood trauma to break free and create healthy, vibrant lives in relationships. Today, we're continuing to delve into a topic that isn't often discussed, but is incredibly important: sibling sexual abuse. As someone who works closely with survivors, I've seen the importance of these conversations in the healing process, both from a professional experience and my own personal experience. I know how difficult it can be to talk about childhood sexual abuse, to talk about our own very personal experiences. I also know that keeping it inside keeps it inside. When we don't talk about it, it's easy to think that we're alone. But when we do talk about it, we can see more clearly that sibling sexual abuse happens way more often than we think. So if this is your experiences, if this is in your history, you're not alone. And if this happens to you, there is support available. We just need to talk about it. Today, I'm honored to welcome my dear friend Jane to this podcast, to this episode. Of course, this is not her real name, but I've known Jane for over 30 years, and she's bravely agreed to share her experience with us today. So welcome, Jane.
Thank you.
Yay. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Nice to be here.
Yay. So my goal today is to really create a safe space to discuss the complexities of sibling sexual abuse, like the challenges that survivors face and the paths to healing. So it's my intention that through sharing Jane's story, we can more fully understand the impact that this type of abuse has on a person's life. And I hope that this conversation will provide insight and support to those who've experienced sibling abuse or know someone who has. So Jane, I wanted to really just first really appreciate you for sharing, for doing this with me, because I know it's not the easiest thing to do. And it's very brave and courageous of you to do that for me, for people who are listening. So thank you. Can we just start? Can you share a little bit about your childhood and the circumstances that led up to the abuse?
I don't remember too much of what led up to it, if there was anything specific or anything that happened. I remember being a very happy child, having a great life, two parents who loved me and supported me. Mm-hmm. You know, it was good. I never really got along with my brother. He was always very mean to me. It was mostly verbal abuse, although there were some times that he'd, I remember I had my hair in curlers, and he came by and hit one of the curlers, but they were attached with a bobby pin.
Ouch. So, oh my
yeah, God. It did hurt. But he didn't do any of those things in front of my parents. But then, of course, I didn't have any recourse, so I would tattle, and then that got to be tiresome for my parents.
I see. I see. And how, what's the age difference between you and your brother?
5 years
And he's older or younger?
older.
He's older than you. Okay. And so then what you're saying is that the abuse, it you don't remember something leading up to it, but you know, like it just started happening.
Yes.
And do you remember the when it first happened?
I don't remember the first time specifically, no, but I do remember him coming into my bedroom at night and just touching me above the covers.
I see. Yeah. Did it, how did that affect your, you know, like how did that affect you at the time? Like what were you thinking? What was going on in your mind? What was happening with your
I don't think I really thought too much about it. I was too young to know about sex or I don't think I remember. When I try and remember it, sexual abuse did not enter my mind. I don't even think I knew the
Yeah,
term.
that's a, I think that's a really good point. So, how old were you when this happened?
Well, I have a difficult time trying to pin down. I think throughout the years I've tried to look at ages and figure out. I think it was between 8 and 12.
I see. Yeah, so then you know, especially on the younger side, on, you know, the 8-year-old, like you really wouldn't know. Like, what would, what, I, when I think about it, I like, who's telling us about this thing, right?
Right.
Like, what, it doesn't make any sense, and there aren't words for it,
Right.
right?
But I do remember feeling protected, or at least overprotective, of my parents. You know, don't talk to strangers. Don't wander off. Don't put yourself in a position where somebody could come out of the bushes and attack you. It was always these bad people that were out there. It was never somebody in the house.
That I think that's one of the things that I've learned over the years is that the vast majority of abuse takes place from someone that we know, someone that's close, someone that's trusted, somebody that's in the family or trusted by the family.
Right.
When we were talking earlier, you had said that, and this is true for me. Well, let me ask to say the question first. You'd said that the abuse created a lot of confusion for you because your brother's behavior was so contradictory, right? So in the during the day, he's being mean to you,
Right.
and then in the evening at night, when your parents are sleeping, he's being more kind and loving towards you,
Right.
and that's pretty confusing.
Yes.
Was so confusing for me with that experience with my father too, because I you know, it's just like you don't expect somebody to be that way. So how can you share a little bit about that confusion, how it affected your
Well, I wanted the him being nice to me during the day.
right?
And that just never happened. And there was, you know, 4.5, 5 years between us. You know, I was still in junior high, he was in high school. There was too much of a gap in age there. I do remember one specific time, well, several specific times, but one specific time where we were in his bed and he had an erection and I didn't know what it was. And I kept saying, stop it. Why is this happening? He said, I'm not doing anything. It's just happening. And yeah, looking back on it, it's like, geez. But I think I was 9 or.
That's really young, and you wouldn't ex you wouldn't know what to do around something like that.
Right.
And so when, like, with not understanding that, like, at what point did you understand that what was happening?
I don't think I thought about understanding it. I just thought about it became so uncomfortable that I wanted it to stop. And I don't remember the specific day or time or year. All I remember is my parents saying that they were going to run an errand and that they would be back. And I said, don't leave me alone with him. He bothers me.
And is that, and that's when the abuse ended.
Yes, my dad understood. And I don't know if I told my dad or if I told both of them. I don't recall how that happened. I think I only told my dad, and he got it right away.
But was, and so I, in my situation with the abuse, like, nobody talked about it afterwards. So was this, how was this handled then by your father or your family? Where here you're saying, don't leave me alone with him. He figured it out, and then he never left, they never left you home alone again.
Well, yes, basically. I my father never told my mother. He went to my brother and told him emphatically to leave me alone. And the abuse stopped. But he never told my mother. So when they would need to leave to run an errand, and they'd say, come on, you have to come with us. I would say, well, I don't want to go with you. Well, you told me you didn't want to be left alone with him. You're the one that doesn't want to be alone with him. So it made me feel like I was being punished.
Now you have to go. Why don't you take him? I
Yeah.
think you shared that before. Why don't you take him?
Yeah.
And they said, w like, we were talking about that. Well, they didn't want to
Right.
be with him either. I mean, that, I think we have to make light of some of this because it can be so heavy, right? That,
Yes. Yes.
but so did your did your father ever talk to you about it again afterwards?
No,
Did,
never.
never asked you if it was continuing, if he was still bothering you? No.
No. I have a feeling, though, that he suffered from insomnia every now and then, and I think what he had was sleep apnea, looking back on it. So he would, because he would nap, especially on weekends when he wasn't working. So I have a feeling that if he woke up in the middle of the night, he would be going into one or both of our bedrooms to check and see. So it would, I can't think of the word, but I think my dad would be prone to do something like that. He wanted to continue to protect me.
And you felt that. You felt protected by him in the way that he responded, or?
No, I don't think I did. I don't think it registered at that time. Only looking back on it now
I see.
and knowing the type of person he
I
was and
see.
how he reacted, our talks and,
How did this then how did you navigate your relationships with your family? How did you this shift how you were in relationship with your brother, for example?
Oh, well, the verbal abuse continued on.
So nothing changed during the day.
No.
And was there physical abuse during the day too, like when he hit you, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, the hitting and the, but you know, when I was growing up, you got spanked.
Right,
It
right.
was a so tussling with other kids was not really frowned upon or anything like that, you
Right.
know, just get over
Right,
it, kind
right.
of an attitude.
Right. So you had said that late looking back on it, you felt you can see who your dad was and that he would protect you or he would do something like that, but at the time it didn't really register. But how did you feel inside around your family, your parents at the time?
I think things went on fairly normal after that. It was never mentioned. I never went to therapy or psychologist, that we didn't have psychologists at schools when I was growing up. But my mother came from a very strong Presbyterian background. You know, stiff upper lip, suck it up, kind of, you know. So the fact that they didn't have me see anybody, a psychologist or psychiatrist at that time, was completely understandable.
How did it, you and you might understand that you might be able to answer this, you might not be able to, but to the best of your ability, like how do, from your awareness, how did the abuse shape your adult life or your adult relationships or how you showed up with other people in life?
Well, I think it's only as an adult now that I can look back and see how it shaped. I don't think I ever put much stock in how bad the abuse was. Not that it was, I was never violent. It was just manipulative. So I don't think at the time I really thought too much about it. But looking back on all of the relationships I've had with men, they've been manipulative and nice to me during the day and not as nice as at night, and or the opposite, nice at
Nicer.
night, but yeah.
Yeah, so some similarities. What's it like just acknowledging that, being able to see
Well, every time we're together, we kind of talk about it a
that?
little bit more. And I think last night we were mentioning, and you brought it up, that my husband was kind of the same behavior, you know, nice to me during.
It was one of those like ding ding.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
And so just from last night to today or right now, how is that impacting you or integrating like the awareness of that?
Yeah, I kind of wished I would have seen that 20 years ago. That would have been my life would have been different, but I made a choice to stay, and you know, there were a lot of positives that came out of that marriage.
Of course, we've talked about a few of those too, like some of the best things in your life came out of that relationship. And I think part of, just making like having this awareness of the patterns, like one of the things that I've when I work with clients and for my own life, I've discovered that really the only way that we make changes and have shifts in our lives is when we have new awarenesses,
Right.
right? And once we have a new awareness, then it's like, oh, now I can do something about it. But until then, we're just in that pattern.
Right.
We don't realize it. And I've certainly experienced that in my own life and relationships as well. Like I stayed in a relationship for a very long time for the same reasons. And I'm like, I can't, I accepted so much less than what I would have if I wasn't
What you
inside of this
deserved.
belief, right? I was in this belief that I didn't matter, and so why would I think that I deserved anything more than whatever one somebody wanted to give me, even if it was crumbs, I shared earlier with you too that I see you as a really strong and resilient person, like that you've been able to just a perspective. Like I remember some of the things that you've said to me, like around that you've never really made it like this is your, like,
It doesn't define me.
doesn't define you,
It's
right?
something that happened to me.
Yes. And it just seems like you've always held that kind of perspective, which is really very a strong perspective to have. Right. I think I let that the abuse define me, even though I didn't know I was doing that, not consciously, of course. But yeah, inside of that belief, I don't matter. I'm not gonna really see anything else.
And I think I'm a pleaser too. So when I am in a relationship, if there's something wrong, there's something to fix, and I'm the one that can fix it instead of just letting them figure out how to fix it.
I think that's really common in
Women.
with women in general. Yeah, even without abuse, it's common, right?
Because we're, well, it's innate, I think. It's
Yeah.
it plus all the social
I
and
was gonna
then
say,
how you're raised and that kind of, and the nurturing the mother does
Yes.
for the
Well,
most part.
and that's all socialization when we're saying it's mother's role to do the nurturing and father's role to do the protecting or whatever, providing. It's all socialization. How do we get free of that? I don't know. How has that belief that you've held that it doesn't define you, defined you or impacted your life? To be able to believe that it doesn't define you, what were you able to do as a result of that perspective?
Well, I don't think I really thought about it very much. I think it ended when I was 12, and I guess it was always in the very back of my mind, but it very seldom came forward until I met you and we shared.
Remind me, tell me what about that time, what
Well,
happened?
I was over at your house, and we were hand quilting a quilt that you had made. And I think my daughter was born at that time. Maybe not. And we were just chatting, and then you brought it up of your abuse, and then I brought it up as well. So I hadn't really thought about it until after it stopped. I mean, every now and then, but nothing. I think if it had been violent or that would have been different for me. But since it wasn't, then it was just something that happened, and I knew my brother would never admit to it. I knew he'd call me a liar, which
He did,
did happen
right?
when I finally told my mother about it. So I don't think I really even thought about it defining me. I just, it's, that was just me. I just didn't think about it very much.
Another thing that you shared, and I th this is really common, I think, with survivors, is that feeling of guilt, like I did something wrong, or it's my, you shared a little bit about that, like for a, that was that kind of where it shifted for you when we were talking that time, that you felt partly responsible for what happened. Or
No,
how
I
did
don't
that
think I
shift?
ever felt responsible for what happened. I think I just, I mean, looking back, I wonder why I wasn't strong enough, didn't think to say anything. Didn't tell him no, but there was never really any guilt in that. When and I just, I guess I wasn't aware very much of what my dad did and why he didn't tell my mother, and my mother saying, well, you're the one that doesn't want to be left alone. And that's the guilt that I felt like, well, wait a minute. What?
So it's my, I'm getting punished for this.
Right. I'm getting
But
punished.
not even really knowing for sure whether or not your mom even knew what had happened. Like you never even knew if she, if he, if your dad told her.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, this is one of the things, one of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you and to share this here is because of that place of not talking to our kids, not having that. Share a little bit more about that later, but I think that's a really key point is here you're saying he's bothering me. Your dad is saying, stopping it, basically going to your brother and saying stop it, but then there's no conversation afterwards.
Right.
I mean, I'm just as a young girl going through that, I understand the place of not like I don't understand anything anyway. But where I am today, I'm like, gosh, we need to help our children understand what's happening
Right.
and give them words to use.
Right. And I was very upfront with my children when they were quite young, about appropriate touching and inappropriate touching. And then when they got old enough to understand, then I told them about myself.
Oh, you did tell him.
Yeah, I told both of them.
How old were they when you told them?
No, probably junior high,
Okay.
or
I see.
maybe with my daughter, maybe 12, or when she started her period, or something like that. Because that whole th but I kind of wanted to make the conversation approachable with me, so I was always talking to them about school and teachers and what are you doing, and did this person. I just wanted to make the conversation open so they would feel that they could come to me with whatever was going on.
And how did that, like just from that perspective, did you notice that they did come to you with things and did tell you things that were going on in their lives in a way that maybe they wouldn't have if you hadn't made it so open?
I think my daughter did, yeah. I don't think my son did as much. I do remember in fifth grade he got the sex packet from school, and it came home, and he had to read part of it out loud and answer questions. I had to read part of it, so it started that dialogue. And I don't recall if it came, if inappropriate touching was in that. But I, from what I remember, it was about that time, fifth grade then. So that's junior high.
So I'm curious about were you gonna say something?
Well, just a little interjection. My brother ended up being arrested for molesting a stepdaughter. And he had an ankle bracelet. And when my
The
father,
monitor.
when he realized that, my dad cut off all communications with him. And never spoke to him again.
And your father, just for the sake of people listening, your father has since passed, right? And so, from that point, they never spoke again. As long,
From the point when he was arrested until he died. So my brother
Go ahead.
had a son, and that. And my nephew had four children and two girls. So when my mother moved closer to me, she said offhandedly that my brother was living with his son and children. And I said to my mother, "Did you tell the mother of these little girls that their grandfather has been arrested for molestation?" And she said, "No." And I said, "Well, don't you think that they deserve to know that?" And she kind of shrugged her shoulders. And this was after she knew,
So you
after I
hear
had
after
told
she,
her. And so I got on the phone and called the police in their city. And said, "I can't get a hold of them. They're out somewhere. Can you send a policeman there to tell them, be aware of it?" And my nephew never believed me. He said, "My dad said it wasn't true and that you're lying." And I said, It really doesn't matter whether you believe it or not. Just don't leave your dad alone with your girls. That's all."
And here you are. I mean, what, when I think about that kind of thing, I think, what in the world? What motivation would somebody have to call someone up and say, he sexually abused me when I was a kid? Like, what would the motivation be to lie about something like that? Like, people who we don't talk about the, like, it happened and we don't talk about it, right? We're not going to talk about it when it didn't happen. Right? We're not going to make it up. We don't even talk about it when it does happen. Like, there has to be some kind of motivation. On the motivation is you want to keep those girls safe. Why else would you call him?
Well, my brother thought that I was wanted all my parents' money.
That, right. But that, no, that's not what, but your brother did this.
Yes.
So that's just what he's, that's just the excuse that he's using to tell his son
And my mother.
and your mother. Right. Oh my gosh. That it's that's crazy.
And so I've had, when the girls were younger, I've had them out for a week or so for visiting during summer vacation and whatnot. And so I've talked to both of them about it too. Not in great detail, but they were young. They were 10 maybe when they came out.
That's a hard one. How do you keep? I know somebody that I've worked that I know who I actually created a video for him with something to say, Jeremy Endica. something to say, and it just got posted this past week. And his story is he went and approached the person who abused him when he was a kid, and he's the one that got arrested for harassment, right? Like something has to change around this to where,
The victims are not punished.
yeah, for sure. I mean, I just can't. I mean, nobody. I don't know of anybody who's going out there lying about this kind of thing. Maybe I'll discover something, but there's going to have to be something really significant that compels somebody to lie about it. You know, I'm curious if there was like any like what support there wasn't any, so you didn't talk about it, so there wasn't really any support there for you, and you just kind of went about your life, and it's kind of what happened in my world too. It's just like, okay, we're just going to go about our life.
Yes.
Life is normal. When we were talking earlier, also last night, you mentioned that one of the hardest parts of sharing your story was how people change the way they look at you when you tell them. And so I'm curious if you could share just a little bit about that and how you've navigated that, and you know what, just so that people can understand what your experience was around has been around that.
Well, I think it was a physical look as well as an emotional look, if that makes sense. Like physically, they would, oh, I'm so sorry. But then there was always this idea in the back of my mind that every time they looked at me, that's what they're thinking, whether that was true or not. So when I finally was in therapy, and then my therapist said, you should have your parents come up and have your mother in with you,
This is
and
after you were married.
this, right, and tell her. Then I started talking more about it to different people. But as I said, I didn't like their reaction. And I mean, in a way, it's kind of a private thing. You don't want
Yeah.
to really announce it. But at the same time, I was feeling like I should tell my great nieces about it. So I felt the responsibility to tell other people, and my husband was not supportive of that at all. He did not want to hear anything about it. So there was no talking to him.
Yeah, you say, you know, like this private thing, and here I have written a book about it, like talking about it everywhere. And I come up here, and you say, oh, every time I come up, we talk about it. I'm curious if because silence is part of what keeps the, I've at least that's what from talking about it so much, I have learned that the silence can keep those energies stuck, you know. And I'm wondering if there's been any positive, I mean, I'm hoping there's been a positive impact talking to me about it. And oh, but if not, it's okay. But what has been the impact of sharing it with me and talking about it?
I think telling my great nieces was a I felt when I heard the sentence that my mother said that my brother was living with his son and children, I immediately called the police. Immediately. That was my duty. That was my responsibility. So I think it was well worth it. I think everything is fine. Nothing happened. The mother was very aware, or we still speak. But yeah, other
Yeah.
than that, and my children, yeah, don't really talk about it except with you.
But in terms of it being a positive or negative experience in talking about it with me.
Oh no, I think it's definitely it's a little uncomfortable sometimes, but no, much more beneficial than not talking about it.
And do you have any sense of in what way it's beneficial? I mean, I know that's a hard question, but what I'm trying to, like, let's say there's people listening and they're out here and they're like, have never shared it before, and they don't have, and the, and there's they're struggling with this in silence and alone, and so they've say they've never talked about it before, and yet they know that this is something that they need to talk to somebody about. What would be the benefit of doing that?
Well, I think if someone is having difficulty talking about it, I would urge them to find a psychologist that has dealt with that kind of behavior first, and then be guided by therapy. And if not talking about it to anybody else but the psychologist or psychiatrist, it would definitely be beneficial. There is a weight that comes off your shoulders, definitely, when you start talking about it. But there's
I've experienced that. And you know, the first time that I started, that I said anything about the abuse, I mean, I'd be in tears. I wouldn't be able to. And then as somebody asked me what in the beginning, you know, what's wrong? What's wrong? What something's going on with you? Well, I was abused by my father, you know, and be so defensive and angry, and that would come out. But over the years, it's like, okay, this is what's happened to me, and it's easy to talk about it today and not have it be, even though it's part of who I am because it happened to me, it's not like that's not the identity, right?
right.
And so I've found that being that talking about it eases that. It makes it easier to talk about it with people. The more I talk about it, the easier it is to talk about it.
Right.
But when I first started, it wasn't easy at all.
Right. Yeah, I agree. And people's reactions are different. Some people are interested and they want to ask questions, and other people you just get complete silence from. And so you have to decide if you're okay with that kind of brick wall coming down. Like, and of course, immediately you're going to think, well, I shouldn't have said that. Should have kept
You
this.
know, this is so interesting because I don't know if it's because of the work that I do around this, but you know, I've looked at the research. There's like the research says 1 in 4 girls, 1 in 6 boys that this has happened to. And when I talk to people about it, and because I will share, you know, oh, just as part of normal conversation, I was sexually abused by my father. And the response that I get, probably 9 out of 10 women say to me, that happened to me too. And so it's like, I don't know if the response I'm getting is because of the work I do, but 9 out of 10, not 4, 1 out of 4. Like, I just feel like this is happening way, way more. And 1 out of 4 is what's reported.
Right.
And if we're not talking about it, that's an underreporting of the magnitude of how of what is happening, I
Right.
think. When you look back on Not that you're doing this all the time, except when I'm here. But when you think about the past, what support do you wish you had? What would have been good to have at that time?
Well, I wish my dad would have told my mother, definitely. And I don't know that they could have afforded a psychiatrist or a psychologist when I was young. But I think that definitely would have been, looking back on it, it would have been helpful. I don't know if I would have been open to it, though, either at such a young age. And
I
then
wasn't.
to have an adult that I didn't know say, this is sexual abuse, when not even ever having heard that phrase before. So I don't know. That's
Yeah,
a
that's a
tough
hard
one.
one. It's a really hard one. And as you're saying that, I'm thinking also, wow, like your brother didn't get help either. Like, what would that have been like if he had a psychiatrist or a psychologist or a therapist or somebody to talk to? Somebody to tell him this isn't okay to do this.
Because he went on to marry a woman who had a daughter, a young daughter. And those are this young woman, who's now a young woman, and I were the only ones I know about. So what other young girls were subjected to that?
And if he had gotten help when he was a teenager, maybe he wouldn't have gone on to hurt other people. So I really believe that educating our children is crucial. And your story about saying he's bothering me really shows how important it is to pursue these statements more deeply, to really understand what's going on. And so, I can only imagine that when you told your father you were thinking he's bothering me, and you know exactly what that means, even if you didn't have the word, but you didn't have the words for it. And what's he thinking, right? He's bothering her. Like, we need a common language. And what do you think about what we need to do differently as a society to help children communicate more effectively, to help, to be able to say this is what happened to me.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
It
I mean,
is.
obviously we need to talk to our children, but there are things that parents have a very difficult time even mentioning.
I'm guilty of that for sure. That is just, I wish that I would have had better skills. Better, training. We need that as parents. Maybe part of a parenting
Class.
class,
Absolutely.
and maybe ongoing, how to talk to our children at different ages. There's some really good people out there that I follow that are doing that. So I'll see about bringing that forward in some of these in an episode on how to talk to kids. That might be a really good conversation to have with somebody who knows how to do it better than me. So, yeah, that's good. So, as we wrap up, I really want to encourage anyone listening who's experienced sibling sexual abuse to come forward, to seek help. You don't have to suffer in silence, and there is support available. And the more that we talk about it, the more power that we take back over our lives and relationships. So I want to really thank you, Jane, for your courage and sharing your story. I know it's going to make a difference for people who are listening today.
Good. I hope
And
so.
yes, why else would we be doing this, right? And so any to everyone who's out there, just remember, you're not alone, and there is a path to healing and freedom. If you or someone you know is struggling with sibling sexual abuse, please reach out for support. Share with a trusted friend, a therapist. Reach out to me at leilareyes.com, LEILAREYES, leilareyes.com. And I just want to end today with just really very strongly, every voice matters, every story counts. And until next time, take care and be kind to yourself. Thank you for joining me on this episode of From Trauma to True Love. I honor your courage for being here, taking steps towards the love and connection that you truly desire. I've been there too, stuck in painful patterns, longing for love but unsure how to create it in a way that felt safe, real, and lasting. You don't have to figure it all out on your own. If you're ready to explore what's been holding you back and discover what's truly possible for your relationships, I would love to support you. Visit Leila Reyes, LEILAREYES, Leila Reyes, and schedule a call today. We'll take the first step together toward the deep, meaningful love that you were born to have. I can't wait to connect with you. Until next time, take good care of yourself and know that real, lasting love is within your reach.